From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Do you have a best friend, a confidant? Is there someone you must talk with whenever something terribly good or terribly bad happens? Linguistics expert Deborah Tannen has delved deep into the fabric of how women communicate. She kicks off the Festival of Jewish Literature this week. Today we talk to her about her book, You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. It can get complicated when friends have different styles, like blunt versus indirect, or interrupting versus pausing.
That's the thing about conversational style. We tend to assume that our way of doing things in an automatic sort of way is the only way to do it. And we interpret what we would have meant if we had talked in that way.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Do you have a best friend, a confidant? Is there someone you must talk with whenever something terribly good or terribly bad happens? Our guest today has spent decades researching and writing about communication that can build up and break down relationships among men and among women. Most recently, she delved into the fabric of women's friendships, probing what communications will forge a strong connection with one friend and what could create a chasm with another. Deborah Tannen, professor in the Department of Linguistics at Georgetown University, is the author of You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. It's now out in paperback. Tannen will kick off the Festival of Jewish Literature, an 11-day celebration of the Jewish community's love of reading, writing, and the written word. The festival starts this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Soul Center at Bethel Synagogue. Welcome to On the Record, Deborah.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
One of the ways you define developing the strength of women's friendships is about sharing secrets. Talk about that.
Yes. And it seems to be significant for women's friendships more than it tends to be for men's friendships. And of course, nothing is true of all women and men. But you know that image of two little girls and one is whispering in the other's ear. For many women and for girls, your best friend is the one you tell everything to. And so knowing what's going on in the life of your friend is actually a requirement for many women of friendship. If they learn that something important was going on in their friend's life and she didn't tell them, they'd be hurt. They would think, gee, I guess we're not as close as I thought we were. So there's that level of closeness that for many women is created by knowing, and I guess secrets is a way to talk about their being very personal, but they may not all actually be secrets, just personal information about what's going on in your life.
So that personal information is kind of a currency between friends.
Yes, and this is something, again, that tends to distinguish women's friendships as compared to men's. Talk is the glue that holds a relationship together. Whereas for many boys and also for men, it might be doing things together. And of course, they will talk while they're doing things, but it's more common to see two girls or two women just sitting and talking. So you make a date, you have tea, you have coffee, you take a walk, and talk is the main thing that you're doing. So it's something about the sense of closeness that gets created by exchanging personal information.
But still, you also write about betrayals of friendship among women. What constitutes a betrayal?
Well, I write about cutoffs where you think you've been close and then suddenly one ends the friendship. I don't think I actually use the word betrayal, but I do talk about how, on the one hand, many of the women that I interviewed for this book, and I interviewed 80 girls and women ranging in age from 9 to 97, many said that their friendships with women were the most nourishing, the most precious things in their lives. But a few women did tell me they find friendships with women difficult terrain to navigate. And some of what they talked about was this sudden turn where a woman friend might suddenly cut off the friendship. And sometimes it's a feeling that, as one woman put it, I can't be different. If she says an opinion and I say I have a different opinion, if she says something is a problem for her and I say that's not a problem for me, she thinks I'm putting her down. And so that's another way that women might actually, you might say, feel betrayed, because you expect your friend to say, oh, I know how you feel, the same thing happened to me. And you might be the one who feels put down or betrayed if she says, I don't know why you feel that way. I wouldn't feel that way. And then there's the other side of it, the woman who I was talking to who said she feels that she isn't free to say that she's different.
You've brought us right up to something I wanted to ask you about, the section, the really interesting section that you call Troubles Talk, which I could definitely relate to it. I hadn't really put that name on it. Explain what you mean by Troubles Talk and how it creates bonds among women friends.
Yes, very common kind of conversation among women. Something's bothering you. You talk to your friend about it. She might ask, gee, you know, how did that happen? What did he say? What did you say? What do you think you might do? What do you think he would do if you did that? What do you think he would say if you said that? And you explore the problem together. And you often end up feeling like it's not so bad because somebody understands what you've been through and somebody cares. It's that sense of closeness that gets created by talking about troubles. There are so many ins and outs about this. Sometimes I talk to women who, when they were single, really had a lot of conversations they appreciated about the problems they were having dating. Then one of them gets into a stable relationship. And suddenly she feels she didn't really have that many problems to talk about, and she feels bad about it. She needs to have some troubles so that her friend won't feel, I'm saying, oh, I got it all together. Another side of this, and again, this goes back to the book I wrote called You Just Don't Understand. One of the anecdotes there, or one of the scenarios I described that really got a lot of attention, a conversation where a woman might say to a man she's close to, about a problem, and he'll tell her how to fix it. And she's frustrated. She wanted to talk about it. And he's frustrated. He's trying to be helpful. You know, why did you tell me about it if you don't want me to help you fix it? At that time, I made the comment, she doesn't want a solution. She wants to talk about it. I don't think that's quite right. I wouldn't put it that way now. I would say she just didn't want that solution right off the bat. She wanted to start a kind of troubles talk conversation. And by giving you the solution right off the bat, he's shutting down the conversation. And that's kind of what she was looking for in the first place. So I often talk about message and meta message. So the message would be the meaning of the words. The meta message would be what it says about the relationship, that you talk in this way to this person at this time. So just being willing to engage in that long conversation about your problem sends a meta message of caring. And if I offer you a solution and shut down the conversation, it can imply, you know, I don't really want to have this conversation. I'm not that interested in your problem. Let's talk about something else.
That's author Deborah Tannen here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her book, You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. Tannen kicks off the Festival of Jewish Literature later this week, Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Soul Center at Bethel Synagogue. So you write about, in Forging Relationships, this connection versus competition in conversation. Tell us more about that.
Yes. You could say that there's an issue of whether what you say is creating connection or creating competition. And again, this is something that in the past I said women were more likely to focus on the connection, men were more likely to focus on the competition. I wouldn't say that women are not competitive. We tend to be competitive about different things. But the very same way of talking could be interpreted either as connection or as competition. So, for example, if I say I had this bad experience, and then you say, oh, I had something even worse, is that trying to make you feel better? Is that connection? or am I trying to one-up you that my experience is worse? There was an example that I encountered that I was very intrigued by. There were identical twins, German runners. They were running in the marathon of the Olympics, and they finished the marathon holding hands. It was a wonderful photo op, beautiful moment. They got a lot of criticism from the German sports organization because they were not sufficiently competitive. That's what they were criticized for. You must try your best. And if you both got there at the same moment, one of you was not trying her best. Well, in the interview, one of them said, well, here's how it happened. We were running separately. We were getting near the finish line. I saw that my sister was within reach, and I just gave it all I had. I found energy I didn't know I had, and I caught up to her, and so this was this wonderful moment. Well, did she catch up to her so that it was competition because she didn't want to be bested by her sister, or was it connection? And I think that's a great example of how it's often not that easy to tell the difference.
You draw parallels between women's friendships and romantic relationships. In what ways?
I think in many ways, every close relationship has much in common. The great sense of satisfaction you can get, and also how vulnerable it makes you. So if you have invested in this friendship, you've told personal things, you've gone out of your way to do things that have cost you time or money, and then you get disappointed. The level of pain that people told me about when a friendship ended, especially cutoffs, when they did not know exactly why the friend ended the friendship and didn't expect it to come to an end. Women cried when they told me about friendships ending in that way. And so it was that level of vulnerability, the level of satisfaction I was told about also. One woman put it this way. She said, you know, a really good friend, it's just like you could be sitting next to each other on a log and you're just happy to be in that person's presence. And that sounds very much like a romantic relationship.
It does. It does. We need to take a short break here. Deborah Tannen, professor in the Department of Linguistics at Georgetown University, is with us. She's the author of You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. She'll be talking about that book and others at the Festival of Jewish Literature kickoff event on Thursday, November 8th at 7 p.m. at the Soul Center at Bethel Congregation, 8101 Park Heights Avenue in Pikesville. The talk is free. The after party starts at 8:30 p.m., and that requires tickets. We have a link to information at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. When we're back from the break, we'll talk about conversational style and the impact of social media on friendships. I'm Sheila Gass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking with Deborah Tannen, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, about her book, now out in paperback, You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. On Thursday, she's the opening speaker of the Festival of Jewish Literature at the Soul Center at Bethel Synagogue. Deborah, the second chapter of You're the Only One I Can Tell addresses differences in conversational styles. Give us some examples.
Two friends were taking a walk around a lake, good friends, and one was telling the other about some problem, troubles talk, as we discussed before. And the one she was talking to was listening, but then when she saw, for example, a really beautiful flower, she said, oh, look at that flower, or, oh, look at that little duck along the way, on the surface of the lake, isn't that beautiful? And her friend stopped and she said, you haven't listened to a word I've said. And the friend to whom she said it is the one who reported the story to me. She said she was so hurt. Of course she was listening. That's a difference in conversational style. Do you believe that a listener should never interrupt for any reason? Or do you believe it's fine for quick interruptions because you want to point out something that if you didn't point it out, if you didn't interrupt to point it out, the person would miss it? There are so many examples of conversational style that vary by region, by ethnicity, introvert versus extrovert. And in fact, I wrote about this. My very first book was about New York conversational style compared to California. Indirectness would be another example. There was two women, and they were really good friends. A third one was visiting whom they knew from college. It was actually a guy, sorry. He's visiting from college, and he visited one, and he said, gee, I'd like to see the other. So she called her up, and she said, gee, so-and-so's here. Do you want to see him? And she said, yes, brought him over. The next day, she got a call from her friend. Why did you do that? You know I hate him. But you said it was fine. You should have known from the way I said it that I didn't mean it.
Now, that really resonates with me. My mother was the queen of indirect. May want to think about as opposed
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll give you one more example. A friend was visiting, and she kept getting up and helping me in the kitchen, you know, helping serve, helping. And I really didn't want her to, and I kept telling her not to, and she kept doing it anyway. In fact, at one time, I actually grabbed her by the arm and stuck her in her seat. And I was really getting irked by this, hoping to show that. I hoped it wasn't showing how irked I was. If this had been, I hadn't been writing the book, okay, she's a good friend. I would just have let it go. But I wanted to understand her perspective. So I talked to her about it afterwards, and she said, in my family, when people say they don't want you to help, they don't mean it. What it means is you're a guest and you shouldn't help, so I appreciate it all the more if you do.
Exactly.
And we both, and I think we both found it, and she found it extremely almost liberating that sometimes she doesn't have to do all the work, that maybe people mean it when they say they don't want her to help. And I realized that there was a logic to her not listening to me, which to me, before I hadn't seen, and I was so embarrassed because I've written books about this. That's the thing about conversational style. We tend to assume that our way of doing things in an automatic sort of way is the only way to do it. And we interpret what we would have meant if we had talked in that way.
You set up another difference in style. It may relate to what we've just been talking about. High involvement versus high considerateness.
Yes, this was the pattern that I observed comparing speakers from New York City with speakers from California. And it happened that the speakers from New York City were also of East European Jewish background, and the ones from California happened to be Catholic. But these differences aren't limited to those cultures. The high involvement style speakers tended to speak more loudly, stand closer, talk about more personal topics, and often they would talk along as a way of showing enthusiasm. Now, we all know about saying, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, when somebody's talking. But how about, I know exactly what you mean. The same thing happened to me. Are you trying to take the floor or are you still doing kind of listener talk? So the New York speakers often talked along to show enthusiastic listenership, and they were misinterpreted as taking the floor. So I called it high involvement because they were using language, they were putting it on record how involved they were. Oh, my God, yeah, very, very enthusiastic responses. High considerateness speakers, I gave it that name because it's a feeling that to be considerate, you need to leave a much longer pause between turns to make sure that the other person has finished rather than jumping right in as soon as their voice starts to go down. And the indirectness also is part of that style. It's a way of kind of communicating what you mean with a softer touch.
I would have assumed that women don't form a really close friendship with someone whose conversational style is very different from hers, but I gather I'm wrong. How do they work it out?
I heard so many stories of these kinds of confusions because of conversational style differences. Often we're attracted by the difference. Somebody seems so quiet and self-assured, and I'm really drawn to that. Someone seems so energetic and full of life, and I'm really drawn to that. And it's only over time that you start bumping your head or, you know, both of you kind of bumping your head against the other person's style and misunderstanding it. But it seems very common that we're drawn to people with styles who are different because they seem so interesting, perhaps, or perhaps they complement us in a way. But then over time, those kinds of frustrations can leak in. But I think just realizing that it could be a conversational style difference is so helpful. If you feel you're not being given a chance to talk, you might just start speaking a little bit more quickly. Don't wait for that pause. If you feel you're doing all the talking and you don't know why the other one is so quiet, count to seven before you think the other person is done. And lo and behold, they may start speaking.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with author Deborah Tannen about her book, You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. Tannen is also the author of You Just Don't Understand, about men and women in conversation. You're Wearing That, about mother-daughter communication, and You Were Always Mom's Favorite, about how sisters communicate. When you started researching how people communicate, social media didn't exist. How has social media changed communication between friends, for good or ill?
I think it's both good and ill. It has ratcheted up patterns that we saw from way back. So girls and women constantly taking selfies, texting their friends all day, using Instagram, posting pictures. It's a ratcheting up of this sense of connection that you want to feel that you're close. On the other hand, there can be a ratcheting up of some of the negative things. When girls and women told me they were hurt, often it was feeling excluded, not having been invited to something. And I call that, we know about FOMO, fear of missing out. I call it FOBLO, fear of being left out. With social media, the risk of feeling left out goes way up, because people are posting these pictures of everything they're doing, including everything they did when you weren't there. People gathered without you can be hurtful, and that's a big risk with social media. Also, the confusion, because you don't have tone of voice, you don't have facial expression, and so I heard about a lot of misunderstandings because of texting, Facebook, and all the other on-screen conversations. You know, just something as simple as, you want to change the time that you're going to go for a walk. And your friend says, okay, fine. And that sounds a little unenthusiastic. And so you say, are you sure it's okay? No, really, it's okay. Well, we don't have to if you don't want to. And several people told me about these kinds of back and forth exchanges that can be a little maddening, but are kind of inherent in the limitations of the on-screen conversation.
More true of older friends than younger friends?
I think it happens at all ages, and you have miscommunication between older and younger because of different, this is if the friendship is across age, different assumptions about how you use these media. So we all want to be polite, and we all want to show our consideration for each other, but our ways of doing it can vary. And because the etiquette around all these social media is so emergent, it's changing so fast that the chances people will have different ideas about it are really pretty significant.
In decades of studying how women communicate, how men communicate, tell me something you've learned that really surprised you.
You know, something that surprised me when I wrote about this, was interviewing people about friends, was how frequently women told me their husbands or boyfriends were their best friends. Because that I didn't hear that 25 years ago when I was doing research for You Just Didn't Understand. In fact, back then I would frequently say, if you ask a man who his best friend is, he'll probably say a woman. If you ask a woman who her best friend is, she'll also answer a woman, not the man that she's close to. And so I think this is something that perhaps has evolved about relationships that I thought was very positive. And I think it's a change.
Very interesting. Deborah, thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. It was great talking to you.
Debra Tannen, professor in the Department of Linguistics at Georgetown University, is the author of You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships, now out in paperback. Tannen will be speaking and signing books at the Festival of Jewish Literature kickoff event this Thursday, November 8th at 7 p.m. The lecture is free. The after party at 8:30 p.m. requires a ticket. It all happens at the Soul Center at Bethel Congregation, 8101 Park Heights Avenue. Over 11 days, the festival will feature writers and performers from across the country and cover a range of topics and literary genres. Here are a few. Simcha Paul Raphael will talk about his book on Jewish views of the afterlife on November 10th. Debra R. Wiener will discuss her book on Middle Ground, A History of the Jews of Baltimore on November 13th. The next day, November 14th, there'll be a panel discussion about how literature can connect Baltimore's diverse communities, bridging the cultural gap through fiction. That's November 14th. And Jeremy Dauber will close out the festival with Jewish Comedy, A Serious History, on November 18th. Times, locations, and tickets vary. We'll have a link to all the information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Happy you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.